Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, caring for communities. The Africa Jesuit AIDS Network marks its seventh year of providing holistic responses to the HIV pandemic in countries across the continent. And a well-kept secret. The president of the US-based Catholic Medical Mission Board offers some reflections on why the church should be more vocal in sharing its wide experience of AIDS work with others. Art and music, stories and poetry, youth projects, health centres and spiritual reflections. These are just some of the very creative ways in which Jesuit priests, religious and lay volunteers are now responding to the AIDS pandemic across the African continent. Far from being just a medical emergency, the Church in general and the Jesuits in particular have been spearheading a holistic or multifaceted response to the HIV/AIDS crisis, providing care for the sick, comfort for the dying, and support for all those fighting to stop the spread of the deadly disease. The African Jesuit AIDS Network, or AJAN, was set up on June 21, 2002, by the Jesuit superiors of Africa and Madagascar as a priority for their order, encouraging religious to accompany those living with HIV/AIDS and to develop projects that are appropriate for the different local circumstances. Today, members of the network are active in 30 countries across the continent, coordinated from an office in Nairobi by Jesuit Father Michael Cherney.
The network was set up to encourage Jesuits, wherever they were in sub-Saharan Africa, which is in 30 countries actually, to encourage them where they lived, where they worked, in their ministries and in their community life and with their colleagues, to respond to HIV/AIDS. So you see, it's a broad mandate in the sense that it wasn't a particular task and it wasn't a particular way of doing it. And so I would say that the happy fulfillment of our mission 7 years later is to see the list, the names and the involvements of, I can say now hundreds, maybe it's not more than 300, but 200, 300 Jesuits in Africa who really are involved in many, many different ways. These are Jesuits who have their normal Jesuit jobs. These are parish priests, high school teachers, spiritual directors, formators, superiors, novices, Jesuits of every stripe and position, you might say, who most of them have found a way of responding to AIDS as part of what they normally do anyhow. And then there's a dozen, two dozen, three dozen who are doing something that is visibly and, let's say, remarkably and publicly involved in the struggle. So you have the two kinds, but we have to say that our first priority was the involving everyone, each wherever he is, whatever his opportunities are. And then the second, derivative one, although it was what most people had in mind, was the big project with, you might say, with AIDS in the name or AIDS on the door.
So let's talk about some of those big projects. What kind of work mainly are you trying to spearhead in this battle against the disease?
Well, again, I would have to drop the word mainly because we have not made any policy option in terms of what we do. So every example I give you will be different. And I presume that if you invite me back for our 15th anniversary, the variety will be even greater. So, for example, in Togo, there is a center located in a poor neighborhood, which is an integrated multi-service center. It's a center to which people come for a whole series of AIDS services and AIDS activities. And it itself is very closely linked with an educational center so that, in fact, people don't even have to say that they're coming for AIDS service. They're coming to the educational center. They want to participate in something. But in the course of that, their many different needs are met. On the other hand, in Burundi, we have something which is, if you could say it, practically the opposite. There's no center as such. There's a small office which at which the staff get ready to go out into 10 different remote and practically inaccessible parishes. And from this one program, they serve the needs of these different parishes. So you see, it's completely decentralized, even though the people do come for medical care at the, you might say, the head office. But most of the work is done out of a truck that visits one parish after another.
So clearly the key is responding to the individual needs of parishes, communities, villages.
Schools. For example, a very lovely program in Addis Ababa, which is based in the university chaplaincy. So there's nothing to see. I can't show you anything on a visit, but university students are encouraged and helped to get involved, and they themselves have found HIV-positive people to work with who themselves feel, if I can use the word, saved, because now they have something to do, and also they can support themselves a bit, but they're not locked away and thrown away as many AIDS people are.
What would you see as the biggest challenges in this work? You're talking about, as you say, a huge variety of different projects and different situations. What for you is the one real difficulty that you feel you're still trying to work on?
The difficulty is this. This is a new ministry for the church. 25 years ago, it didn't exist, and we are still discovering many dimensions that really it's extraordinary how complex this is. What is the difficulty? The difficulty is that this has been an important public issue. It burst upon our awareness as a very big, high-profile issue. And with the involvement of the UN, with the Bush Initiative, with different high-profile things, it has been, you might say, front and center for a while. But it's slipping from its place, front and center. I think you will, if you look at your own newscasts, you will see much less about AIDS this year than you did 5 years ago.
I'm quite sure. Isn't that because we're making progress, or is that a wrong reading of it?
Well, it would be a somewhat accurate reading if we were talking about Europe or America. It's not very accurate if we're talking about Africa. See, that's part of the problem. The way we see it is shaped here, but the way we live it there is not the same. So what I'm getting to as the answer to your question, what is the challenge? The challenge is to settle down for a long-term commitment. We say that it's a 100-year project. It's going to take a century to deal with this properly. And that we're going to work on this for the century that it takes, and not less. That we're not going to go away and do something else because something else seems more urgent. But based on our experience of the needs of the people whom we do serve and the many thousands and millions whom we don't serve yet, that we're there to hang in until the need has been dealt with. And that is going to take generations still.
When we're talking about success in the fight against HIV/AIDS, perhaps your definition of success might be very different. In the secular world, perhaps success is getting everybody who is sick on antiretrovirals.
That's not a bad goal, but only 10% of those who are infected are eligible to take antiretrovirals at any time. So there are 90% of people who are HIV positive, who have many needs, who might be a danger to others, who need pastoral and human and sometimes material help and care. And the manufacturers of antiretrovirals and the financiers of these big high-profile programs are completely unaware and disinterested. So if we said, fine, the 10% can be taken care of by the, let's say, the medical complex, but what about the other 90%?
These are people who are not sick enough to be taking ARVs.
They're not sick enough, or they are already too sick, or they don't have enough food so they can't take them, or they can't afford the bus fare to the clinic to pick them up, or they don't know about this yet, or they would be killed by somebody in their family if they even made a move in this direction, and so on and so on and so on. It's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And what I feel so encouraged about by the church's response is that most often we're not reaching out. We're there already. These are our people, you see. So it's not that we sit in a chair and think, now what shall we do and where shall we go in our Jeep in order to bring our service? No, these are our people. These are our parishioners. These are our students. These are the families that we come from. And we need to continue to be with them. And we need to give them the very, very strong feeling that although they are HIV positive or otherwise affected by AIDS, that they are fully members of the family of God and fully members of the Christian community and, in fact, fully integrated in their own natural families, which is not always easy.
As you say, the church's outreach in this area is extraordinary because of the network of parishes and communities that has always existed there. And yet we saw again recently an attack, a virulent attack on the church's policy on HIV/AIDS during the Pope's trip to Africa, described as unrealistic and ineffective. Mm. Were you surprised, first of all, at that or not?
Well, not really. I was surprised that it caused such a huge fuss because neither the question nor the answer were very new. But on the other hand, it was maybe a salutary sort of ventilation of the issue. And the experience we had is that the question seemed to be about Africa, but the brouhaha was clearly a Western one. It was clearly a question of Western culture or global culture coming up against the church in a, I think, what we could call a serene and long-term approach to sexuality. And an approach which is, frankly, and we saw it so clearly, very, very countercultural. And I'm happy enough to say that we are not going to adapt our approach to something as important as sexuality based on a cultural trend or a cultural wave. And when the Pope calls for the humanization of sexuality, I don't see how anyone of goodwill couldn't say, well, at least let's all agree that that's what we need and that's what we want. But we didn't even get that far.
But why is there this refusal? The issue is clearly about condom use as AIDS, HIV prevention. And yet this seems to be the only issue, as you say, around which the whole AIDS care and prevention debate revolves in the secular view.
Well, I mean, there isn't much debate about AIDS in the secular view. I mean, we were saying earlier that it's no longer the hot issue that it was. So I'm not sure that there is much debate. You know, the big programs continue. I wonder if they're going to survive in this current economic crisis. And other than that, except for the occasional scientific conference, I'm not sure that there's that much interest. I certainly don't see many articles in the press about it. So we shouldn't think that it's an issue into which that was already lively, into which the Holy Father then entered. No, it was an issue that was more or less in the background. The condom is a concrete object and a symbol, and therefore easy to kind of wrap the whole issue around that. But in Africa, that's certainly not the issue. And I would say even in the West, my impression is that the upset in the media isn't so much about the condom. It's about the possibility that with regard to sexuality, there's both yes and no. It isn't just yes. It isn't just consensual. There are things that one should do, and there are things that one shouldn't do, and there are people with whom one should, and there are people with whom one shouldn't. And this simple possibility that this is something about which culture and society and religion and family should have some say, and that it's not just up to how you and I feel at the moment, this is unacceptable. And this is what the Holy Father really unleashed, I think. And I think the debate will go on. It'll come back. And I don't know how it'll go, but I certainly know that in Africa his position is much appreciated because it coincides with an awareness, not necessarily of how everyone behaves all the time, but that this is the kind of human community in which we want to live, where this is subject to our own wisdom and our own discipline.
Why is it that this view finds it so hard to be accepted? Why? What else can you do, perhaps, to try and better promote this long-term holistic vision you're talking about?
Well, I think you're now asking me a question outside of Africa, so that's not a bit unfair that I should have to answer that. So I'll say that I really don't know, and I don't know how the church is... I don't know what issues around which the church would have an opportunity to speak very publicly about sexuality nowadays. So that would maybe make some difference. But I think that a new catechesis about sexuality based on this simple but I think very illuminating phrase that the Holy Father used in his answer to the question on the plane, namely, a humanization of sexuality. What makes sexuality really human? And that the church and other cultural and moral and religious groups have something important to say about that. I think if we could find a way of doing that, I think all of society would benefit. Otherwise, it's up to the advertisers and the media in the sense of not so much the news media, but the entertainment media, to set standards of ever greater, let's say, entertainment and provocation and titillation. But to call that humanization of sexuality, I think, is simply false.
Looking ahead the next 7 years, what perhaps are your greatest hopes, your ambitions for these next few years?
I think my single greatest hope is will sound very modest or very conservative. I hope that we can continue. I hope that we can continue to make to involve more Jesuits. If there are 300 involved now, there's over 1,000 still to involve. So there's still many opportunities for Jesuits in Africa to do something, each one to do something about AIDS. And I'm very excited to see what kind of new projects are going to come up, because I'm quite sure that we're not going to be copying old ones. We're going to find new ways of doing it in different contexts. And I think that's marvelous. And I'm very hopeful that in the larger church, that AIDS ministry will be calmly and seriously and competently incorporated into what the church normally does, so that in 15 years from now, you might not need to interview me about this, because it'll be obvious that at least in Africa, the church is it's involved in AIDS ministry, not because the UN raised the alarm or because Bill Gates gave billions, but because that's part of life, and being part of life and an important and difficult part of life, the church wants to be with people when they are in those difficulties. And it could be as simple as that. And I'm hopeful that it will be more and more normal that anyone who's in trouble knows that he or she can turn to the local parish, the local religious house, the local Catholic school or university chaplaincy and find sympathetic, competent, and challenging help. And that, I think, for that we would be very grateful.
My thanks there to Father Michael Czerny, coordinator of the African Jesuit AIDS Network, with music by Jesuit Father Wilfred Sumani. And if you'd like to know more about the organization, you can find them at www.jesuitaids.net. Providing quality health care, even to the poor living in the least developed countries of the world, that's the goal of the Catholic Medical Mission Board, which is increasingly focusing on AIDS care and prevention in many of the more than 100 countries where the organisation is working. CMMB, as it's known, was founded over 80 years ago and is now the leading US-based Catholic charity focused exclusively on global healthcare in countries around the world. From its headquarters in New York, it sends medical volunteers, free medicines and supplies to promote health programs, especially for women and children in the developing world. The president of CMMB, John Galbraith, was in Rome recently to discuss the work of the organization with partners here in the Valley. Vatican.
Our mission is all international healthcare. I emphasize international because many times we've been asked if we could support programs in the United States, and it's clear that our mission is not. And Catholic charities in the United States would be much more appropriate for some of the things that we've been asked to do. So we are all international in scope. We focus entirely on healthcare. And again, that can get stretched sometimes when you say, well, is healthcare good nutrition? Is healthcare education for proper basic health? And so the only thing that I clearly explain to people that we don't do is we don't build hospitals or clinics. We certainly work with our partners if they are constructing new hospitals and clinics to try to get medicines and equipment that can be donated and that we would then make available to them. And we also, as one of our main programs, we have a medical volunteer program, doctors and nurses. And so oftentimes we help to staff with volunteers various hospitals and clinics, sometimes as they start up. So that's in a nutshell the mission. I think that we also, if you look at what we like to say are kind of our organizing principles, we do feel that we should be where the need is greatest. And sometimes that makes us sit down and have to realize, well, we can't be everywhere. We have to make choices, and what are those choices going to be? We don't have enough resources, obviously, to be everywhere. And so, as an example, we recently actually decided to close our India office, even though we'll continue the programs there. But we feel that, again, in these financial times, we have to be really careful about how we use our unrestricted monies that are donated to us. And we really felt that the capacity of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of India that we've worked with now for almost 10 years has reached the point where if we have to make a choice, they'll be better off on their own than for us not to move to another area that might need our help more.
A lot of your work is increasingly directed towards HIV/AIDS care and prevention, isn't it?
It began shifting in 2002. We've often had discussions that we want to be aware of the major problem that poses, certainly, especially in Africa at this point. But our mandate is broader than HIV/AIDS. And unfortunately, for programs like child survival programs, a lot of the money that has been allocated either from the Global Fund or in the U.S. government for PEPFAR, which is the big HIV/AIDS program, some of it has simply been reallocated. It's not new money. And so you see a lot of the other health programs have been somewhat cannibalized in terms of amounts of money that are available. But we have a major number of child survival programs and women's health programs as well. When you look at the dollar value, however, and if you were to divide up the dollars that go to the various programs, at this point, a major portion of the program money is HIV/AIDS money, and that's mostly in Africa.
I've often heard it said that the church, particularly in Africa, is providing a large percentage of the care for HIV/AIDS,
yes.
And yet it doesn't receive a corresponding amount of the global funding that is going towards this work.
Correct.
Why is this, and what can you do about it?
Well, if we had 3 hours, I could explain to you that's some of the reasons I'm having meetings here. Well, first of all, it's clear in the country certainly where we work, which is more east than Africa, but a little bit in the west and south, that you could honestly be pretty much accurate by saying that 25 to 50% of the health care is being provided by either the Catholic or the Christian mission churches. I've been in many situations where I've had ministers of health tell me it's probably more than 50% in Kenya, for example, a few years ago. So that's a fact. Part of the problem, of course, is that there is very little documentation of that. And a discussion I had yesterday, I'm trying to work with a number of organizations to do a better mapping of the health, if we would call them systems, that exist in countries, specifically for HIV/AIDS, but I would even say broader, just healthcare.
Because these are built on existing church networks,
They've been there forever. They've been there forever. And the fact of the matter is, you'd be surprised at the ignorance of governments as to the extent of and where some of these facilities are, actually. I mean, I've been approached by people and say, can I take that information? Ministry of Health people in countries in Africa, because they don't have anything that says, in this region, you have all of these hospitals and clinics that are run by the church.
Right.
They just don't have, they kind of know it. But when it comes to funding, you know, you really have to tell your story better than the Catholic Church healthcare systems do. And I say that in a constructive criticism way, because we've done a lot of analysis of that. I think that because most of the attention is on the patients, and you'll hear it time and time again, doctors and nurses, sister doctors, they'll all say, we don't have time to keep these kind of records, to do the monitoring and evaluation and the reporting that is ultimately necessary if you're going to get larger tranches of money that come from the U.S. government, any other country's government, or the Global Fund. So that in itself is an intrinsic weakness built in. It's a strength and a weakness because there's so much great patient care. It's a weakness because if you don't tell your story and you don't tell it and document it in an audited way, you are then looked at as not a partner that can't manage larger amounts of money and larger programs. So that's the root of it. There's cultural problems. There are, if you look at the Global Fund, the way the mechanism for funding is set up, there are country coordinating committees, country coordinating mechanisms in each country. They're supposed to be a representative body of all the groups involved in HIV/AIDS. They're not. And the church many times doesn't either get the opportunity to sit on that country coordinating mechanism or when given the opportunity, sometimes doesn't take advantage of it. And the higher up you go in the discussions about country-level grants, the more it becomes political. And you just, as I said again, you have a lot of people who are involved on the ground. They can't see the value sometimes of having to take somebody from that situation and put them into the diplomatic and the political arena to fight for tranches of money. And so what happens is a country gets a block of money. Recently, I think Kenya just received another large amount of money. But even though 50% of the healthcare in Kenya is represented by the churches, the Christian and the Catholic churches, my guess is that if you looked at the country coordinating mechanism there, which is an organization called NACO, there's not 50% representation of church health facilities versus government-run or private-run hospitals. And so they don't get the political clout to be able to say, as the money is then reprogrammed in the country, that equal amounts should go. If 50%, if you're dealing with 50% of the population and taking care of them and the government acknowledges that, then realistically you'd say 50% of the funding for HIV/AIDS should go to that, and it's nowhere near that.
So the church has an important step to take in trying to tell its own story and advocate and become much more a part of the funding system.
It does. Mm. If you were to ask the religious superiors of many of the orders who work in Africa for information on the extent of their HIV/AIDS work or their infectious disease work, they would be hard-pressed to tell you. They would not know, probably. They'd know bits and pieces, but you could never give a holistic picture of the extent of that right now. If that could be done, I would guarantee that many, many governments in the developed world, in the North, would want to be able to see that and validate the anecdotal, I say 50% in Kenya. I mean, I was told by a minister of health two presidents ago it was 55%. He corrected me because I said it was 45. So I really think that mapping is a project, and I know there are a number of things that are in the works right now. I wouldn't want to talk about them now. I think it would be premature. But I have certainly voiced that over and over. I have been asked many times by the U.S. government as well as major funders in the United States, is there information on the extent of the work of the healthcare work of the church? And I always say it's bits and pieces. I have a little bit. I know this. But there is not really a definitive mapping of, even in most countries, it's bits and pieces.
Yeah. Is this because of competition between, for example, the different religious orders or the different Christian denominations? What are the obstacles to doing this?
I don't think it's so much competition as it is lack of awareness of what other congregations are doing or what other dioceses are doing. We do a lot of work in Haiti. That's where our founder actually started. And I've been in situations where we usually send major medical pharmaceutical donations to Haiti. And I've been on trips, and I visited a hospital or a clinic, and 2 or 3 miles away, I'll visit another hospital and clinic that don't even know that the hospital or the clinic is functioning very close by. And so then I say to our people, I said, well, look, why don't we, instead of sending individual donations, why don't we send a large shipment and allocate it to the various hospitals and clinics in the area? Well, that means you have to know where they are and so forth. So we have done that a little bit on our own just to get economy of scale and be able to be cost effective.
And my thanks there to the president of the Catholic Medical Mission Board, John Galbraith. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.